You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Jamal Collier, our MLB.com Nationals reporter. And Jamal, the ballpark of the Palms officially opened on Tuesday. One of the more grandiose names for a spring training facility for sure, but the commissioner was on hand down in West Palm Beach. The Nationals win the game on a walk-off home run by Michael Taylor. The ballpark, if not completely done, is pretty close to it. It seemed like a pretty neat day to be down there with the Nationals.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Anytime you can kind of break up the monotony that comes with just spring training games in general is always a good thing. But this was as far as spring training goes, a pretty big day. When you got this stadium that both teams both kind of badly needed and wanted a new spring training home and facility. And really to have the 15-month timetable when they started in November of 2015 until now to see how kind of quickly and impressively they put this thing together. It was really something to see. The commissioner kind of remarked that his first time, he was there when they broke ground back in 2015, and to then come back for them the first time and see everything that kind of has been put up, and everything was looks great. It's running functionally here, and there's still some things, of course, they have to finish up over the next couple of months. But for all intents and purposes, for fans and for the players, it was a great new facility. And then the game was also exciting as well, with Michael Taylor kind of coming through that ninth inning. First with a good play at the plate to throw out and prevent the go-ahead run from scoring, and then hitting the game-winning home run in the bottom of the ninth. So overall, just an exciting day here in West Palm Beach. And, you know, like I said, here in spring training, anytime you can get some excitement, you are ready for it.
Taylor great on Tuesday, and he's been great pretty much throughout the spring so far for this team. Obviously, he's a guy who the goal is to be, I guess, that fourth outfielder. But how impressive has he been overall, and what's his attitude like this spring?
Well, this is one of the more interesting kind of storylines, at least for me personally, I think about this spring with Michael Taylor, because you go back to last season, and he was amazing. I forget exactly what his exact numbers or totals end up looking like, but you know he was playing really well, showing off power, showing off his speed. He was getting on base a ton, and there was not a small segment of Nationals fans that were calling for him to start every day and to potentially bench Jason Worth at that point. Worth was coming off a down year and coming off an injured year. So, of course, then right away, Ben Revere gets hurt. Michael Taylor gets thrown in there, and he is the starting everyday center fielder. And things did not go well. That great spring training didn't carry over into the regular season. So it's only been a handful of games so far here as we get going, but he does look good again. He is kind of starting to put some things together, and it's going to be interesting to see will he be able to carry over more easily. Will he be able to what kind of adjustments is he going to make, or just exactly how do you, it's weird because when you have success and it doesn't work in the regular season like you did last year, is that something that matters at all this spring for him? And is it something where this is kind of just a trial run anyway, and they're going to pitch him entirely differently and do entirely different things to him during the regular season that, how much does this matter? You kind of wonder. So, Taylor's an interesting case for me because, like you said, he is competing for that fourth outfielder spot. He's probably still the favorite. If they have an injury in the outfield, he'd probably be the guy to step in and play every day. But at the same time, there still are question marks as to exactly how good he could be.
Bryce Harper also got off to a good start. His first at-bat of the spring, a home run, that's got to be encouraging for him. And what's he been like coming off, obviously, the disappointing season? Sometimes guys can show up at spring training with, that frustration carrying over, or they can show up ultra-focused. What's he been like so far?
Yeah, Bryce is probably close to the latter, where he's kind of very focused, very ready to put, let last year be last year and kind of move on with it. The biggest, I think, difference for me is that the guy is definitely, he's always a big guy and a strong guy, but he looks physically, he's bulked up, put about 15 more pounds on. Of course, it's kind of a workout. Workout nut in general, and you kind of see all his social media. He's always posting kind of his latest workouts or his latest impressive lifts. But he very consciously put on some weight this offseason with the idea that sometimes last year he would drive balls, think he got all of something, and it would just fly out to the warning track, or he would pop it up somewhere. It just felt like he didn't have the power to necessarily put the ball out of the park as often as he did a couple of years ago. It's one of the things that got, I think, a little bit lost in his season last year. That was kind of, like I said, the disappointment overall. But really the thing that happened is he stopped hitting for power at all. I think he had five homers after the break and one home run in that final month. the season. So, I mean, if these are good signs that he's driving the ball so far, he's kind of being able to pull the ball and put it in the air a little bit. So if that returns and he kind of returns to having the power that he had when he hit, you know, I think near 40 home runs or 40 home runs in 2015, I think that's all positive signs for Bryce this season.
And the negative note so far, I guess, Max Scherzer was able to throw his first bullpen on Saturday, obviously coming off the stress fracture late last year on that right ring finger, but he wasn't able to throw his normal fastball. How much concern is there as we get further into spring and he's still not on a normal, regular spring routine?
We're getting there. I don't think it's necessarily overly concerned just yet. They're still kind of just more being cautious. I mean, I think on one hand, they are optimistic and saying, hey, when he first got here, that finger was still barking the way it was. We didn't know when the heck he'd be getting on a mound. So the fact that he is at least throwing off the mound right now, and even if it isn't, you know, exactly the fastball grip that, you know, he's accustomed to, at least his arm's staying in shape. So you don't have a guy who you have to kind of build up from the bottom here at this point. So really what you hope is that in the next week or so that the pain will go away, he can start going back to his regular grip, and you can start ramping him up and getting him into games. You know, if then we start looking at a week and a half down the line here and he's still having problems gripping the fastball correctly, then I think that's when you start to I don't say worry a little bit, that he might really not be on time for that first week of the season or even later. But it's still enough time right now. We're still at March 1st and about a little over a month before the season starts. So they're kind of right on that line right now where Max, you got to watch a little more closely, but not too soon to panic right now.
The Nationals have added more depth to that bullpen. It's obviously something they've been working on for the entire offseason. They didn't get the big name guys at the back end that they were hoping to get, but they had Joe Blanton, or agreed to a deal with Joe Blanton 1 year. There's some incentives in there as well. He's a guy who seems to have had so many careers almost, Jamal, where he's been great, and then he's looked like he was done, and then he's been great again. And he was really good in 2016. So where does he fit into the Nationals bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I like this move a lot. Let me just say that kind of off the bat, because the biggest thing for the Nats, and there's been obviously a lot of attention as to what they're going to do with their closer, who's going to pitch the ninth inning. And Joe Blanton, you know, has never really been a closer, doesn't have the experience. So he's not necessarily the answer in that way. But if you're going to move a guy like Sean Kelly or Blake Treinen, or the names that we've kind of been talking about, if those guys are going to move up and move into the ninth inning role, well, you need somebody to help, you know, pitch those earlier innings and pitch those earlier roles that they were doing. And it really hadn't found anybody all offseason to replace, to add their depth to their bullpen. And I think Blanton is going to do that. You know, he was really, really, really good last year, and it came out of semi-nowhere. Like you said, as a guy who maybe 2 years ago you wondered if he was still in the league, and for him to be one of the key pieces of that Dodgers bullpen last year was very impressive. You know, can he repeat that last year? You know, perhaps not, but I think he's still shown he's got a quality arm and can be a quality major league reliever. And I think you add him into a mix now when you have, you know, Treinen and Kelly and Blanton and Sammy Solis and, you know, guys like Oliver Perez. And now you've got a strong pen. And we saw so often during the postseason and during the season that when you can shorten games up and after the sixth inning or where your starter comes out, where you basically have a lockdown bullpen, you have three or four or five arms to run out there, just what a difference it makes. So exactly what his role is going to be is kind of still to be determined. He still hasn't passed his physical before that deal becomes official here as of Wednesday morning. But I think definitely it's a move that I like a lot, just help kind of strengthen his bullpen, which right now is kind of their biggest glaring weakness heading into the season.
All right, one more thing to touch on with you, Jamal, and that is life on the road. We're talking to all our beat writers here at MLB.com, trying to get some fun stories from your time on the road. Obviously, we'll keep them family-friendly, as far as that goes. But last year, obviously, was your first year traveling with the Nationals all the time. But just talk about maybe a fun story that came about at any time in your career as far as life on the road.
Yeah, the road is it's great. I mean, it's, as far as you talk about a baseball game, it's obviously the grind of 160-some games. And so you spend kind of half your time in and out of hotel rooms and in and out of different cities kind of right away. I love it. My favorite part is trying a bunch of different restaurants. You know, people who know me know that that's kind of going into the city, I kind of look up the best restaurant, whatever their kind of their food necessarily is, theirs is always my probably my number one mission outside of covering the games is to try to find some kind of food to eat. And it's also just kind of a different animal here down in spring training as well when you're here for, you know, somewhere around 6 or 7 weeks. And especially with the Nats, the last couple of years have kind of had some long drives across the state. That's probably been some of the some of my favorite and also some of my least favorite times as well. A couple of days ago, we had a 2.5-hour drive across from West Palm Beach over to Fort Myers. You can imagine seeing things you see 2.5 hours across Florida. And having taken back roads. It's just it's an interesting place, an interesting way to see the country. So that's probably the biggest thing that stands out to me is there's so so many random things. And, of course, in the playoffs last year, we had the rain out, I believe, of Game 2 got rained out in D.C. So that was kind of an interesting thing to kind of to have to cancel flights and scramble for the next morning to try to get a flight out. It was a Sunday morning or so to get to L.A., which is great because you gained so many hours, but the game was a 1 o'clock game because the Cubs were playing the Giants, I believe, in that game 3 or whatever. I forget exactly what game in that series. But basically, if the Cubs would have won they would have won the series, the Nats would have been playing later on that night, would have been playing, I think, a 4 or 7 o'clock game or something. But if the Cubs won, the Nats were going to play at 1 o'clock. So, you know, on one hand, you're booking your flight, and hoping that if the Cubs win, if the Cubs lose, you're basically going to get off your flight and go straight to the ballpark. And I think the game went to extra innings or something, too. So you've got to stand up late watching, trying to decide, okay, am I packing to get off this plane and go straight to work? Or am I going to be able to pack and get settled and get checked in? And, of course, the Cubs end up losing that game. So the Nats had a 1 o'clock game right after. So it's always just kind of a guessing game as far as how to book flights or how to, you know, kind of measure all your time and all those things. But yeah, life on the road is one of the many fun things about the baseball beat.
Yeah, it's fun and it's also stressful. I know playoff time, there's been nights where I've had hotels booked in 3 different cities and waiting to figure out who wins to decide which ones I need to cancel and which
and
ones I
race,
need to go.
Yeah, the race to cancel them while you can.
And nothing beats Alligator Alley in March, right?
Few things do. Few things around the country are.
All right. Great stuff, Jamal. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Nationals edition. For Jamal Collier, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with Anthony DiComo, our MLB.com Mets reporter. Baseball games are being played in Florida, and it's obviously an exciting time of year. The Mets off and running with Grapefruit League action down in Port St. Lucie. And just a couple days after they started playing games, Anthony, Tebow Mania is back as Tim Tebow arrives at spring training, has a full press conference upon arriving, maybe the most fanfare ever for a guy who will probably spend a good amount of the year in Port St. Lucie playing down there for that team. But he also put on a display in batting practice, I guess. 9 home runs in BP. What's it been like with Tebow's arrival in Port St. Lucie?
Yeah, I don't know if Tebow Mania is the phrase or the word I would use, frankly, because it wasn't like a scene like when Tim Tebow came to the Jets. It wasn't even a scene like you see the first day of Pitchers and Catchers annually down here in Port St. Lucie. It was much quieter than that. It was much more subdued. And yes, there were fans there and there were photographers and there were people craning their necks to see what he might do, but it wasn't outlandish by any means. It was mostly just a guy, to his credit, coming in and spending his first day in camp and doing his work. And since that day, he's done it every day. And I think that's kind of reassuring to those who see this as a publicity stunt or whatever. That really, yes, he had a press conference, but that was because we all wanted to talk to him. He's very much a guy who just kind of wants to go in and get better at baseball. And I think there's a lot of doubters, certainly, and there should be, about his ability to ultimately make it to the next level and to play in the big leagues, which I'm sure is his absolute goal. And frankly, he probably never will. But he is putting the work in, and he's seems to be going about it the right way. And yes, 9 batting practice home runs is a very nice start. If this guy has one tool, it is power, and it is clear, and it is apparent. And he can certainly mash batting practice fastballs. Now, the first time someone breaks off an 87-mile-per-hour slider, we'll see. But for now, it's a fun story, and it's you know, breaks up the monotony of what this year is a very, very long Mets camp with many of the same players we've all seen before. So it's a fun story, and it was neat to see him go and do that and we're just going to have to wait and see where it goes from here.
Yeah, with Yoenis Cespedes not showing up every day in a different car like he did last year, you need something kind of different to be covering other than baseball down in spring training. All right, not all good news for the Mets. David Wright, an injury, that's obviously nothing new, but it's a shoulder impingement. He's unlikely to be ready for opening day, or I guess pretty much no chance of him being ready for opening day. But I guess the good news of this, Anthony, is it sounds like it's directly related to the surgery he had on his neck. And not all that surprising that something like this would come about, and it should be something that he can overcome.
Well, I mean, it seems bad to say, but it's not all that surprising that we're talking about David Wright with an injury at this point in the year because, frankly, he hasn't been healthy for about half a decade now. He's played 75 games combined the last 2 years, and the 2 years before that, he also missed significant time with various injuries. So I would not call this surprising, but I think it is good news that David Wright got, that there's nothing, quote-unquote, structurally wrong with his shoulder. That means no muscle tears, no ligament tears, anything like that. This is an impingement, which is a fancy way to say there's just a lot of weakness in there, and it's causing various things to rub up against other various things that shouldn't be happening. For David Wright, what the Mets believe is that rehabbing from that neck surgery, he just never got the full strength back in his shoulder that he needs to be able to throw a baseball with any sort of velocity. So that's what he's working on now. He's going to be strengthening that shoulder. And the goal is that probably by the end of March, he'll be able to get back to defensive drills with his usual zip with what you would expect from a major league third baseman. Now, we've been down this path before, and no one knows for sure if David Wright is going to be able to do it. All we know now is that opening day seems very, very, very unlikely for him. It means Jose Reyes will be the Mets' opening day third baseman. I mean, someone like TJ Rivera or possibly Ty Kelly will make the roster, whereas they otherwise would not have. So not a good situation for the Mets, certainly. And when you look at the greater body of what's happened to David Wright over the past 5 years, it becomes all the more concerning. But in terms of good news, bad news, whatever you want to call it, things certainly could have been worse.
All right, let's talk about some better news for the Mets. And one thing is Travis d'Arnaud getting off to a good start in games. And obviously he's going to be a real key to this team in 2017 and a guy that the team's going to depend a lot upon because, let's face it, they could have gone out and made a change at catcher. They went with d'Arnaud. We've talked about that multiple times here on the podcast. So it's got to be encouraging when he comes out and looks good at the plate right away in spring training.
Yeah, and he's taken a lot of the noise out of his swing. He's quieted his mechanics very much so. It's very apparent if you watch his swing and what it looks like now compared to even what it looked like in September. And look, it's been less than a week of spring training games, and it's very easy to be sucked into the, well, you know, mechanics are better story. Best shape of his life. We hear that all the time in spring training and blah, blah, blah. So it's going to be incumbent on Travis d'Arnaud to continue doing this all spring and to continue doing it, especially once the regular season games begin in April. But this is a good start. I mean, it's certainly vindication for Travis d'Arnaud that what he's doing mechanically is working. Getting off the start he has is certainly better than having it over at this point in spring. So I think the Mets are very encouraged by what they've seen from Travis d'Arnaud. And the other part of the equation, which we haven't really seen this spring, is his defense, his throwing. In particular, Mets people see him as a very, very good pitch framer, as a guy who's getting better at calling games. But that throwing, that footwork, getting base runners out was a huge issue for him last year. And, frankly, the Mets aren't going to be able to start Rene Rivera every time Noah Syndergaard, for example, takes the mound and has his issues with holding on base runners. So Travis d'Arnaud needs to improve. We need to see that throughout the spring. I'm eager to see some base runners test him this spring in Grapefruit League games and see where his arm is at, because that was a key focal point for Travis d'Arnaud coming into spring training, and it's going to be a key for him throughout the year.
We've seen Matt Harvey, Jacob deGrom, Noah Syndergaard. We've seen their mustaches this spring and different levels of terribleness as far as those mustaches go, but we haven't seen any of them take the mound yet as far as spring training games. When will that start to happen with the big guns getting starts?
Yeah, the rollout begins this weekend. March 3rd is the first time you're going to see Noah Syndergaard on the mound. And from there, it goes to Jacob deGrom and Matt Harvey and Steven Matz. And tentatively, if all goes well with his bullpen sessions the next week, you will see Zach Wheeler make his first game action, really, in over 2 years on March 10th against the Braves. So it's an exciting time for the Mets. They wanted to keep these guys pushed back a little bit, just not to avoid overworking them. Obviously, that has been a point of emphasis throughout camp for the Mets. They do not want these guys to overexert themselves, to throw too many pitches. Even, you know, during defensive drills, these guys are holding back from throwing. They're not playing catch as much. And it's all designed with an eye toward having them be healthy for a full summer this year. We've talked about this so many times. This is a team that is built around starting pitching. If the starting pitching is not healthy, then everything kind of falls apart around it. So that's why the Mets push these guys back. And it's going to be a fun week to see them all back to back to back to back like that. March 3rd, it all begins. Noah Syndergaard and goes from there.
You mentioned Wheeler, and obviously he's one of the guys involved in a battle for the fifth starters role. Seth Lugo's another guy in that. And because he's going to pitch for Puerto Rico in the World Baseball Classic, he's already got two starts under his belt, already 2-0 on the spring. Not that anyone cares about that. But three shutout innings on Tuesday. Obviously, that's a great start for a guy who wants a spot in that rotation.
Yeah, he's making some noise. And you better believe when he goes down there, opening up, pitching game one for Puerto Rico, by the way, against Venezuela, a very, very good Venezuelan lineup, one of the best in the entire tournament. You better believe the Mets, you know, the Mets types who are evaluating this competition are going to be watching him, going to be looking to see how he fares against elite competition like that. He's very much involved in this thing. Robert Gsellman is very much involved in this thing and frankly may have a leg up just because of how well he performed down the stretch last season. And of course, Zach Wheeler, if healthy, is maybe the favorite in the clubhouse to win that job. It's a very intriguing competition, and it's intriguing for another reason as well, because the Mets can't just have all three of these guys make the team, even though they probably all deserve to. They need to protect themselves in the event of injury. They need to keep someone stretched out in the minor leagues at AAA Las Vegas. And it's very possible that Seth Lugo winds up being that guy. It would be a shame because clearly he has pitched his way into the big leagues and probably deserves to be in the big leagues right now. But there's a decent chance that he's not through no fault of his own, just because the Mets do need that depth. And we all know they're not going to be using five starters this summer. They're probably going to be using 8 or 9 or 10 starters this summer. And whoever goes down there to AAA, whether it's Lugo, Gsellman, or even Wheeler, is going to be up sooner rather than later.
All right, one last thing to touch on with you, Anthony, and we're talking to all the beat writers now that you're back at spring training and kind of starting that long journey of the season over the next 7 months or so where you're going to be on the road a lot. So we're looking for some perspective on life on the road, because obviously you've been at it for a number of years now with the Mets. Do you have any great stories or favorite stories, family stories, I guess, that can be shared here on the podcast as far as your life on the road and just maybe a funny story or two that sticks out to you?
I'll give you a story. In 2014, I went after the season, actually. I went to Japan to cover the All-Star Series that the Major League was putting on, and they played the Japanese All-Star teams and a couple of other teams over there, a bit of a barnstorming type of tour. And there was one Mets player who made the trip. It was Lucas Duda, who kind of has a reputation for being, you know, quiet and reserved. But I convinced Lucas to come have dinner with me, have sushi. And we had a great conversation. And he opened up about a lot of things. And but the thing that stood out is just how much sushi that man can eat, which I guess is not surprising. But I couldn't keep up. So that was fun. And you know, anytime you can see a player outside of his element, outside of the ballpark, you just get a different perspective on who they are and on what they really like as human beings. And I think they would say the same about reporters. We're not all evil.
Did you pick up the tab, or was that a split bill situation?
I think, you know, if you ask him, he'll probably say he picked it up, but I'm going to say that I did. I honestly can't remember. Well, let's say I did.
That's fair. And either way, you should be expensing that anyway, so it's all good.
Exactly.
All right, great stuff, Anthony. We will keep things locked in here the next month as far as spring training goes, and we are leading up to opening day 2017. For Anthony DeComo, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for tuning in to MLB.com Extras, our Mets edition. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with Joe Fusaro, our MLB.com Marlins reporter. Games are underway down in the Grapefruit League, Jupiter for, of course, the Marlins in spring training. And that's great news, Joe. And we're early on in the spring, which means hey, pitchers are going to go two innings, maybe three innings as they slowly build things up, and you're never sure what you're going to get. And I guess Don Mattingly has already come out and said early on, he's not really concerned with the results, which isn't all that different from most managers, I think. But what have you seen so far from Marlins pitchers very early in the spring?
Yeah, actually not a lot of action, because I've seen where starters would come out, throw, let's say, 34 pitches or 30 pitches at first start and go two innings. He kind of gave across the board every projected starter one inning. Even I think Tom Kohler, who started today at Houston, his first outing, he pitched the second inning of the opener, had eight pitches, and was out of the game. You know, so I'm seeing that, you know, I think the way they kind of worked it this year was, first time around, they throw one inning, they just kind of get back on the mound, get out there, get the feel, and then kind of build it up afterwards. So it's really hard to judge any, you know, of the pitching. Obviously, the results have been mixed, but in terms of what actually happened. But, yeah, it's almost like getting your feet wet the first time around. I think part of that probably because of the World Baseball Classic and can't be in an extra week, so there's really not a lot of urgency to kind of stretch guys out, except for Edison Volquez, who's going to pitch for the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic, and he's been stretched out a little bit differently. If he's not, you know, doing it in games, he's extended bullpens or you know, like a live BP type of thing. So otherwise, it's you know, as we get deeper into this, we'll kind of get a little bit better measure of how everything's going to pop up.
Talk about short stints, and nobody's was shorter than Wei Yin Chen's first one, I guess. One scoreless inning, and he threw just nine pitches against the Mets on Tuesday. So there's an example. Even when a guy only throws nine pitches, Mattingly's still not deciding to bring him back out for another.
Yeah, and one of those was a strikeout. Yeah, so it was so again, very short sample size. Encouraging thing with Wei Yin was the ball came out of his hand well, and he seems to be, you know, on the plate, which is always good.
A.J. Ellis was signed in the offseason as a backup catcher, obviously a veteran guy who's seen it all in Major League Baseball, but a tight hamstring has him out briefly, I guess, Joe. They thought maybe it was one day. Now it sounds like he's going to be held out for 2 days. Hamstrings generally, I know, can be tricky, but Ellis isn't exactly a guy who's trying to steal bases or anything.
No, but he's, you know, he's a catcher. Yep. And, you know, a lot of, you know, the squatting behind the plate. And, you know, he's a guy that's not going to need a lot of time to get ready for the season, but there are two clocks going here. I mean, they're not really worried about AJ, you know, being ready for, you know, April, but AJ is part of Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, right now he's not scheduled to do any baseball activities up until Friday of this week. And the Team USA guys, Stan, Yelich, and AJ are supposed to leave for Fort Myers to join Team USA next Tuesday. So I believe it's the 7th. So this is, you know, he wants to play and represent his country, but he also has a commitment to this organization. So by the end of this week, the decision could be made whether or not he's even able to attend and participate in the classic.
Joe, now that we're, you know, into the games of spring training, but really overall a couple of weeks into spring training, how much of a, I don't want to say a presence, but how much do you notice the fact that Jose's not there, and was there much chatter of it, or do have the players spoken at all about that this spring?
Well, they were expecting it at least early the first couple of days, and that's what they got. But as we're digging deeper now into March, you know, there's always the reminders, the patch on the jersey. There's a flag with the number 16 on a flagpole right outside of the clubhouse at their complex in Jupiter. His presence is there, but, you know, this is a team in his honor that's moving forward. And so there's not a lot of, you know, daily chatter other than, you know, maybe something that reminds you of or this. But, you know, I think the players right now, they're now over 2 weeks in camp. You know, they're you know, playing baseball and doing their part. But, it's, you know, his presence is going to be felt in many ways in this organization. But, you know, reporters will come in and bring it up again. But it's not like it's just an everyday thing that, you know, people just talk about.
When you look at this team as a whole heading into the season, now that they're back and working out and all the winter moves are over with, do you get a feel when you see this team out on the field that they did enough in the offseason to get back to contending again this season?
It's going to be interesting because, you know, right now they're you know, they've maintained, at least publicly and everything that I've gathered privately, that they want to carry 13 pitchers and 8 relievers. And already you're seeing, if they go to a short bench, that Donnie's going to have a real situation, that I wonder if they're going to have a change of heart by April 3rd, or, you know, they're going to stick with this and hope that, you know, enough pitching, especially the first 5 or 6 weeks, which that's what they kind of, you know, I'm hearing what they want to do. But, I mean, keep this in mind. You're already, Ichiro hasn't played the game yet. He had a collision on February 21st in an outfield drill. He's your, you know, your primary backup outfielder. And A.J. Ellis, your backup catcher, has a hamstring situation. So you already have 2 of the 4 guys you anticipate, you know, being on your bench, haven't played yet, you know, in spring training. I shouldn't say haven't played because A.J. Ellis has played. But, you know, both are currently not available. And then you had, you know, a situation where D. Gordon had a little bit of a bout of pink eye, missed the first 3 games of spring. So, you know, you're going to have those types of situations over the course of the season where a guy won't be available for whatever, you know, not a DL stint type thing, but may need to miss a day or two. And that's going to be real interesting if they did enough in terms of position player depth to cover themselves. Because we're already 4 or 5 games in spring training, and 2 or 3 guys that they anticipate being big parts of the team have already missed action.
You mentioned the guys in the World Baseball Classic. Stanton, obviously, one of those. And this team needs a healthy Giancarlo Stanton all season long. How's he feeling right now? Just early in the spring, what's the vibe you get from Stanton heading into a big year for him?
Yeah, I'm kind of watching his swing a lot, you know, just to see, you know, here's a guy who had a lot of swing and misses last year. His swing lead looks a little less involved or less moving parts. There's not as big of a leg stride, to say. It's kind of, you know, tracking the ball better. He's taken some walks already in spring, which is encouraging. And, you know, he's just trying to get his timing down. Obviously, you're not going to, outside of a mo hit a wild home run at BP or something like that. He just seems to be doing steps to get back to the ball. And, you know, even if it's, he's so strong that his upper body and his hand can get to the ball without having to, you know, get everything into it. Well, maybe home runs won't be 505 feet. They might just be 490. I think tomorrow to take that trade off to see more good hard contacts. But otherwise, you know, he and Yelich are both, you know, playing quite a bit, at least in these early games, as they build towards going to represent the United States in the Classic in a couple of days or next week. So, you know, we're seeing them on the field more, and that's always encouraging when you see Giancarlo Stanton on the field.
One last topic for you, Joe, as you get back to spring training, obviously, and the travel begins. I know for you it's driving for spring training because obviously based down in Miami and you're still in Florida. But over the next 7-8 months, obviously, there's going to be a lot of travel. So we're talking to all of our beat writers here at MLB.com about life on the road and maybe a story or two that stands out to you over the years covering the Marlins and traveling as much as you do, Joe. Is there a fun story you can share?
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes I act like a tourist, too. Like, especially when you go East Coast to West Coast, if I'm staying in L.A., you know, I used to start staying in Pasadena a little bit more when playing the Dodgers. But I've not minded staying on Hollywood Boulevard and, you know, being on the Celebrity Walk of Fame and doing those, like, touristy type things in the morning. Or, you know, a couple of years back when we were in Seattle doing like a little boat ride in the daytime and for the game at night. You know, New York, you know, I'll just have several restaurants that I'll always have to hit, you know, before a game. And but, yeah, it, you know, we have the privilege of being able to go pretty much everywhere. I like to bike ride also if there's a chance, you know, out in San Diego, you know, to get a chance in the daytime to do some riding. And sometimes the benefit of going East Coast to West Coast is my body clock might be on Eastern time zone out in the Pacific time zone. So I might, you know, be up at 6 in the morning instead of up at 9, which might be typical after, you know, a stretch of night games. So I could get the day going a little earlier out west. So those are just a few little things that we could talk about road trips.
Yeah, great stuff, and you've been at it for a while, so I know you actually get to the point where you can have favorite spots in each of the cities that you visit, especially I would think the division cities that you see multiple times year after year. So great stuff, Joe. Continue the good work on the road. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fusaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. We're talking Braves baseball on MLB.com Extras. Tim McMaster along with our MLB.com Braves reporter, Mark Bowman. And, Mark, games underway, actually about a week's worth of them for the Braves. And some good things. We've seen some good things from this team. We're seeing guys coming back from injuries. We'll talk about that. And we'll talk a little bit about life on the road. We're talking to all our writers here at MLB.com about some fun stuff that they've dealt with on the road over the years traveling with their respective teams. But let's start with some recent games. And just Thursday, Bartolo Colon got on the mound for the second time already this spring, which is more than a lot of pitchers, partially because he may still see action in the World Baseball Classic. But Colon has looked good so far, Mark.
Yeah, no doubt. He has gone through the motions, got his work in, however those veterans say it. But, yeah, he certainly looks good. Talked to Don Sutton about him a little bit today. He said he's one of his favorite pitchers, and just because the guy, you know, simply understands the art of pitching. You know, we all know how he's evolved over the last 20 years. And, you know, not only is he, you know, has he gotten maybe the results or, you know, he's gone through his work like he wanted to here for the first couple games, but he's had an impact on some of the young pitchers. You know, you talk to a lot of them, and any of them that's been in his group, you know, they seem to mention that early when you ask them, you know, what's been the coolest thing you've experienced during camp, and they talk about how Bartolo just chatters the whole time, you know, and you know, it's some of it's some funny stuff, but at the same time, it's a lot of nuggets. They get a sense of what it takes to prepare to be ready for every season. Obviously, Bartolo has done that as well as anybody, so he's already made his impact in that way.
I guess questionable for the WBC, he would throw for the Dominican Republic. What is the question? Just whether or not the loaded Dominican team needs him, or is it him concerned about where he's at?
I don't think he's necessarily concerned about where he's at. You know, there's probably a little bit of both in terms of, you know, how much is he needed. He was, you know, he wasn't there on the active roster there for the first round. And that, I think, you know, I think if there's when you get a little bit closer to the season, some of these veterans are just saying, hey, look, I want to put my focus on this team, get used to working with, he is with a new team, so you're getting used to a new catcher, that kind of stuff. You know, I think it's more of sticking with his new teammates, getting used to a new catcher, and, you know, just not altering the schedule that he's used to.
From old to young, we'll go from Bartolo Colon, the 40-something, to Dansby Swanson, who homered in that game, backing up Colon, and Swanson taking Adam Wainwright deep. Wainwright wasn't great in that one, but is Swanson fitting right in, right where he left off in August and September?
Yeah, you know, it's really amazing. You think I spoke to him maybe last December 2015, a couple weeks after the trade. Didn't necessarily meet him until about a year ago. We got down here last February. I mean, you know, as soon as you talked to him, you understood how mature he was as compared to other kids in that situation. And I use that word kid because, you know, he still is very young. He's still a rookie status. But you see him walk around that clubhouse, despite the fact he's only got, 38 games under his belt at the big league level. And not only does he know he belongs, but, the other guys around there treat him almost like a season vet. Chipper Jones arrived here in camp today. It was fun seeing those two interact. Obviously there's some symbolism there with those two cornerstones sitting there talking to each other. But at the same time, you can kind of just tell how comfortable the conversation was going, where Chipper's, you know, offering some advice and Dansby soaking it all in. He certainly advanced from a not only a maturity standpoint, but also from a baseball IQ.
At some point during the 2017 season, I'm sure we're going to see that middle infield of the future get on the field in Atlanta with Swanson and Ozzie Albies at second. Now, Albies obviously maybe would already be there if not for the fractured elbow back in September. He's finally getting approved to play. When are we going to see him in a game, Mark?
You know, I when I talked to him last week, he's aiming for the 7th. I asked him again this morning. He said he's still aiming there for that's Tuesday. So this upcoming Tuesday is when he's hoping. The Braves are saying, hey, look, it may be Tuesday, it may be Wednesday. We're not going to rush it. But I think that's going to, you know, there really isn't any reason to rush him at this point in time. You want him there for a season. He's still going to have 3 weeks as an offensive player. That's plenty of time. I don't think you're ever going to see him. They're going to see him in Atlanta before June anyhow. and maybe not even that soon. You just have to allow, you know, 20-year-old kid with that kind of talent. You're fortunate that you don't have a need to play there at second base immediately. Allow him not only to come back from this injury, but to, you know, complete that development that he didn't get to experience last year when he went to the Triple A level. He struggled a little bit. Let him go there and make that natural progression, and then get up here. So, but the good thing is, you know, he's not mentally or physically, you know, affected. It doesn't seem like by that by the fractured elbow.
Before him, before he gets a chance at second base, obviously Brandon Phillips is the guy right now, traded for recently. Is he fitting in nicely? I know we have some footage here at MLB.com, Mark, of him from photo day, which is always an interesting time because you have these guys up at 7 o'clock in the morning going through the line of photos, and he seemed to be having a great time with his teammates during that, and he's just seems like a fun-loving guy. Has he fit right in with this clubhouse?
He really has. You know, the guys love him. He seems to really love being here with the Braves, and you know, he soaked in the opportunity to see Fred McGriff, Ryan Kleser, some of his other childhood friends childhood heroes. The guys he watched growing up there with the Braves saw the same thing when Chipper came in this morning. So, you know, I think that, you know, given a choice, this is where I always wanted to be. And, you know, as soon as you say it, someone's going to say, well, then why didn't he accept the trade in November? Well, I think that, you know, there was some hesitance that he didn't know exactly how the Braves were going to look once the regular season was about to begin. As you come back to when the trade was ultimately made, he had, you know, obviously the scene was set that Rodriguez wasn't going to be in the picture for sure at that point in time. And I think that's why he accepted the trade. Yeah, but it has been a good fit so far.
All right, Mark, and before I let you go, one last thing. As we teased at the top, life on the road, we're talking to all the MLB.com writers about some fun stories, maybe one fun story from all your time traveling, because it's kind of started now going down to Florida, but then for the next 6-7 months, you're going to spend a lot of time in airports and in hotel rooms for sure in many ballparks around the country. So if you can think back on your time covering the Braves, is there one real fun story that stands out?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you think about all the places you've been. I mean, you know, you think about your favorite cities, San Diego, Chicago. The one trip that just comes to mind, and I'm sure there's others that would make for a good story, but here's one. This was, let's see, this had to have been 2008. Cause it was Glavin's last, and we were at Wrigley Field. It was going to be a trip from Chicago to Anaheim to Texas, three-city trip, and start off at Wrigley Field. And second day there, I thought, four-game series against the Cubs. Second day there, Jair Jurgens misses like the second-to-last step walking down out of the visiting clubhouse there and turns his ankle. Now obviously, that starts something. Jeff Bennett, the next night, asked to be removed from a game because his wife had to be taken to the hospital. And then that last game, well, it was essentially Glavin's last start. Now, he made one more, but that one was one where, you know, you kind of could tell he was going on the DL and he wasn't going to return until August. So there's just a lot going on there. So it's an afternoon game that last day. Dave O'Brien and I from the AJC, we go out to eat that night. We plan to go to the airport the next morning at 7. I said, okay, I'll meet you in front of my hotel 7. We'll get the cab. We get in the cab. We start heading up towards O'Hare, and all of a sudden our taxi gets in an accident. Well, we're going to be crunched to get this flight to L.A. We jump out of the cab, tell him to pop the trunk. We grab our luggage. We hail down one of those super shuttles, jump in the one of those, you know, big blue vans, jump in the super shuttle that stops. Amazingly, we waved him down on the interstate, and we go the extra the remaining 2 or 3 miles. Get to Anaheim, you know, you kind of get adjusted there in the hotel, go to the ballpark, and the Braves were taking BP that night, and Chipper fouls a ball off the side of the batting cage, comes back and hits him in the eye, and I'm just thinking, is there anything else that can go wrong during this road trip? So, you know, there's just a lot of fun stories, and you know, cap things off from that road trip. I believe JoJo Reyes actually won a game, you know, there in Anaheim. So that to throw that into the odd and amazing things that we experienced during that one road trip.
That's a whole bunch of stories in one. Great stuff, and great stuff as always, Mark. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Braves edition. For Mark Bowman, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Phillies reporter, Todd Zielecki. And Todd, baseball is being played, not just drills, not just pitchers fielding their positions, but actual spring training, Grapefruit League baseball. Certainly exciting. So that's going to be the gist of most of this podcast as the Phillies have gotten off to a pretty good start. We'll get into who's off to a good start for the club and what to look forward to the rest of the week. But I think we have to start with Michael Franco, who is just on fire out of the chute. I mean, at this point, after a few games, you almost want to say, save some for the regular season. He hits two homers in his first game, a third home run in his second game. A lot of times they say the pitchers are ahead of the hitters early in the spring, but he seems locked in.
Yeah, he does. You know, and I think the most notable thing about what he's doing right now is he seems to be carrying a different approach to the plate. And I say that, you know, obviously super, super small sample size, but he went into spring training, or the Phillies went into spring training saying, listen, we really need to work on his approach. Sometimes he got a little bit over aggressive, swinging early in the count. He kind of got away from a plan, even if, did he even have a plan going up to the plate? And so, so far, what you've seen from him is he's working the count a little more. He's not afraid to hit with two strikes, you know, that type of thing. And what else he's been doing is, Phillies hitting coach Matt Stairs has talked a lot about the first two rounds of batting practice, concentrate on hitting line drives and work the ball from left center to right center. And I talked to Michael Saunders yesterday about his early impressions of Michael Franco, and that was the first thing out of his mouth. I didn't even have to ask him about it. He's like, this guy takes a really good BP and really impresses his approach. And so what the Phillies are hoping is he takes that line drive, left center to right center field approach, it carries it into games, because if you look at the numbers, if you hit line drives consistently, you're going to hit for a high average, and then, you're almost going to hit some home runs by mistake. So that's kind of what they're hoping for. So far, so good for Michael Franco.
You mentioned Matt Stairs, the Phillies' new hitting coach, and he's having an impact on a lot of players. You have a story up on Phillies.com about the club's number four prospect, Nick Williams, who obviously had a disappointing 2016, spent most of it in AAA. A lot of people thought he would make his way to the big leagues at some point, but he just didn't play well enough to do that. But he's kind of changed his approach, and from what I'm kind of understanding, Todd, his head was moving all over the place, and Stairs is just kind of making him calm down, calm the head movement down, calm the leg down, and it's making a lot of sense for Williams early on.
It is. So, like, what Nick Williams was doing last season is he kind of strode to the towards the pitcher's mound too hard with his front foot, and what that did is it had his head, like you said, moving up and down, kind of almost like bobbing up and down. So when your head is moving all over the place as the pitch is coming to plate, you have trouble with pitch recognition. You can't figure out if the ball is a strike or a ball. Now, this is something they tried to work on with him a little bit last year, but Stairs has really worked at him with it all spring training. He's really been in his head a lot. And I talked to Nick Williams on Sunday afternoon in Dunedin, and the first thing out of his mouth, again, not prompted by anything, he said, I've been working with Matt Stairs a lot, and he's totally got me swinging differently and thinking differently at the plate. Now, nobody knows exactly what that's going to mean for 2017, but the fact that Nick Williams is saying, hey, I don't even know how I got base hits before, to now I go up there and I'm seeing the ball a whole lot better, if it's true and if he can carry it into games once the season starts in AAA, then that's a very good thing, because he's got really quick hands, and I think if he can use that a little bit more, he can let the ball travel in on him a little bit more. He can see the ball a little bit more. Maybe he can kind of put up those numbers that everybody expected that he would put up last year.
Yeah, and I thought something interesting from that article as well, as far as Williams goes, is when he first started doing this with Matt Stairs, he felt completely uncomfortable, which is probably
right.
One reason that in the season he wasn't able to make an adjustment like that, because in the middle of a season, you're not going to want to feel that uncomfortable. But in spring training, when you can really get the extra reps in, he's gotten to the point now where he's more and more comfortable. So hopefully, as you said, that continues into the regular season. All right, well, some of the Phillies pitchers have gotten on the mound for the first time in game action already this week. Jeremy Hellickson got a couple of innings in. We never take much from the numbers as far as these first couple of starts because, hey, they're, to a degree, pitchers are just working on pitches, not necessarily trying to get outs. But Hellickson did give up four hits in a couple of innings, a couple of earned runs. But how did he feel about the outing afterwards?
Yeah, he felt pretty good about it. You know, he entered camp in great shape. You know, very positive about what he's going to be able to accomplish, and you know, certainly with plenty of motivation as well. You know, this is a guy who, just like last season, is in a contract year. So they're hoping that, he's hoping that he can put together another season like he did last year. And if he puts together back-to-back seasons like he did, you know, in 2016, 2017, the guy is probably going to get that big, huge multi-year contract that he was hoping to get, you know, before last season. And, you know, he ended up taking the qualifying offer instead.
They get a walk-off win on Saturday, Todd. I know it's spring training, and I know these games absolutely don't mean anything at all, but for a young team in spring training, it's got to be kind of fun and kind of a little electrifying to get a walk-off win, even in a spring training game.
Absolutely, and what actually made this one stand out is the guy that got that walk-off hit, Brock Stassi. He's actually a legitimate candidate for that, possibly that final bench job. He's a left-handed hitter. He plays a really, really excellent defensive first base. He can hit. He can get on base. He's got a pretty decent on-base percentage, and he can hit for a little bit of power. So, if he can kind of continue to have a good spring, and really his first couple games have been pretty solid, if he can continue to do that, he actually might end up getting that final bench spot.
We're recording this podcast on Tuesday, 1 o'clock. So actually right when Clay Buchholz will be basically taking the mound. And I know we're keeping you from him right now, Todd, and his performance this afternoon. But on Monday, Jared Eichhoff took the mound for the first time as well. 2 innings a hit, an earned run. He walked one. He struck out a couple. What was the reaction from Eichhoff on his first game action of the spring?
Well, you know, he said, you know, hey, it could have been a little bit better, but he was actually is working on something. You know, last season he kind of came into camp, even though he was a heavy favorite to make the rotation, he still felt like, you know, he needed to prove some things and maybe pitch for performance rather than pitch for, maybe just working on a few things here and there. So, but this spring, he's a lock. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Jared Eichhoff, no matter what he tells you or what anybody says, he is an absolute lock to make this rotation. So yesterday he was working on his throwing his changeup a little bit. He only threw his changeup about 5% of the time last year. He wants to incorporate that pitch a little bit more, and he also wants to get a little bit more consistent with his slider and his curveball, in the sense that there would be a start, say for instance, where the curveball is great, and he would just throw his curveball all the time, and then the next game the slider would be great, and he'd just throw the slider all the time. And sometimes that got him into trouble. So what he's hoping now, he can throw him whenever he wants to, no matter what's kind of going on during the game.
So there's some healthy pitchers on the mound. As far as pitchers behind a little bit at this point, Aaron Nola, I know, is having a good spring so far, hasn't thrown yet. But Eflin and Thompson, I guess, both a little behind right now, Todd?
Yeah, they are. You know, Zach Eflin, a couple weeks ago in camp, his right knee swelled up on him during sprints. So he's behind schedule. And then Jake Thompson, he started feeling some soreness in his wrist early in workouts, so he's behind schedule. Now, they're both scheduled to throw a live BP next week, and if that happens, you know, there's a possibility they could be ready to begin the season with AAA rotation. I think it's a possibility maybe that they start Eflin on the DL just because he's coming back from two knee surgeries. There's really no reason to rush him, so that's another possibility as well. But they're behind schedule. Let me put it this way. It's not like 2011, and if we were talking about Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee being behind schedule, now they're going to be ready by opening day. Both of those guys were scheduled to start the season really in AAA. So it's noteworthy because of their talent level, certainly, but in terms of affecting the big league ball club, it shouldn't have too much of an impact.
All right, one more topic to touch on with you, Todd, and it's because you're getting back into the season and obviously spending the next month or so down in Florida, but in the Clearwater area. But then the travel will obviously continue for the next 6-7 months. So we're talking to all our beat writers here at MLB.com about basically life on the road, because you guys travel a ton. Obviously, every road trip you're out there with the team, wherever it is across this country and into Canada as well. Do you have a favorite story from all your years covering the Phillies that's come about from being on the road?
Boy, you know, a lot of them really come to mind, and maybe I could, you know, run through a couple of them real quick. You know, this is probably one of the odder stories that happened to me. It's just one of the odder experiences that happened to me. I was sitting in a hotel lobby in Pittsburgh, the Renaissance, right across the river from PNC Park. I'm talking to one of my college buddies, and I go, holy cow, I think George Jefferson just walked into the lobby. And so I hung up the phone. And I ran over to him. And I was like, yeah, that's Sherman Hemsley. If you remember, anybody remembers the Jeffersons. So I went up to him and I just said, hey, are you Sherman Hemsley? And he said, yeah. So next thing, I said, what are you doing here? He's ended up being in town for a play. Next thing you know, I didn't know this. He was telling me how he actually grew up in Philly. He says, I've only seen two baseball games my entire life, and one was at Connie Mack Stadium. The other one was at the Tokyo Dome. So I ended up talking with this guy for 5 to 10 minutes. Couldn't have been nicer. That was probably one of the more unusual experiences. Another fun experience I had on the road was in the playoffs in 2009 in Colorado. A game got snowed out, and we weren't sure what the Phillies were going to do in terms of the starting rotation. Pedro Martinez had been scheduled to pitch, but because of his health, it was kind of hard to think that he was actually going to be able to pitch on the road, in the snow, in the cold. And so I remember myself and a few of the other beat writers, we went over to the team hotel, and we were kind of roaming around, kind of loitering in the lobby. Some local TV cameras, Philly TV cameras, tried to get into the lobby, and they all got booted out. They started kicking out reporters. And so I was like, I got to see if I can catch Pedro or Rich Doobie, the pitching coach at the time. I got to see if I can catch one of these guys so I can have a story to tell Phillies fans back home what's going on. And so we kind of poked our head into the lobby restaurant. There's Pedro Martinez having lunch. So myself and a couple of other Phillies beat writers, so we wouldn't get kicked out of the hotel, we ended up ordering lunch and basically just like eating / stalking Pedro Martinez for about 2 hours. He must have had the longest lunch I've ever seen anybody have in my entire life. And then Pedro finally finishes lunch, and we kind of hop up, and we're like, is this guy going to think we're huge creeps for like waiting for him to talk to him? But he could not have been more outstanding. He talked to us. He's like, I don't know what's going on, if I'm going to pitch or not. But it was very, very gracious, to us. And I'll never forget that, just kind of the absurdity of, like I said, the hotel booting reporters, TV reporters, us buying lunch. So we couldn't say we were loitering, that we were paying customers. And they're just, it's kind of like pseudo stalking Pedro Martinez to get the story for that day's website.
That's fantastic. The only thing that would make that better is if Pedro had actually picked up the tab.
Yeah, exactly. If we would have known that, we might have ordered more.
Yeah, exactly. All right, great stuff, Todd. As always, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Phillies edition. For Todd Zielecki, who's moving on up, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.